the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, we welcome you to the program. That's right. It is all about Bucket Strategy Investing. You're tuned into the one, I will say, multimedia program, because we're everywhere. The program that gives you the strategies that you need is the one show that doles out the best in money information. And we're here for you every day at the same time. Once again, this hour, we're going to be talking about something known as behavioral finance. I know it sounds like something directly out of a college psychological class. So what does the term behavioral finance mean exactly? Well, to tell you, in its basic form, we, and I'm saying all of us as investors, we're more often than not our own enemy when it comes to investing. We hurt ourselves tremendously. Money, of course, it's an emotional issue with us. It's personal, is it not? Sure it is. Yet success with money often requires rational thought. So how do we stop ourselves from hurting ourselves? How do we stop ourselves from being ourselves? Okay, well, we're going to give you some hints coming up in just a moment. A couple of studies on that. If you got a question for the Brain Trust, you can give us a call right now. We are live. Our studio number, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Lines are open just as the show is getting underway. Emails, you can get those to us here at wealthed.com. Our website, click on the Find Your Answer link, and we do have a lot of those to get to. As well, the Professor Plum, he's tenured. I made him tenured. You're our tenured financial consultant. He's the advisor. He's here again, courtesy of the wonderful people at Lucia Capital Group. They bring you this hour of the show. If you need a bucket strategy put together specifically for you, one that fits your goals, and that's the way it should be, you can call the professor or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at this phone number, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. Preparing yourself for whatever might happen, that's one of the keys to a successful retirement plan. You need to make sure that you have a plan for whatever might happen, whatever could come down the line, and you don't know what that's going to be. So be prepared for anything. Again, the number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. On the air, that's important to us right now because we have lines open for you. Any money question you have, any money issue that you have, 877-PLANNER, our number, 877-752-6637. So we'll dab a little bit into this, Professor Plum, just sort of give people an idea of what it is we're talking about. But when we say we are our own worst enemy, what do we mean by that?
We're emotional. We're human. We don't always do what's in our best interest. We are fearful of losing money. We're greedy and want to make money. And unfortunately, those two driving emotions tend to really screw us up mentally when it comes to making decisions about our money. Money is a very emotional issue. And unfortunately, emotions tend to make you do some strange things.
They make you do some really odd things that if a rational person who has no connection to the emotional side of it were to look at what some of the people do in times of crisis, especially, or in times of, you know, when things are going great, they might say you're nuts. Now I've brought this up before, and this really says it very, very well. Joshua Brown wrote a piece several months ago. Called The Biggest Threat to Your Portfolio. Well, of course, we know. We just said, it's you. It's us. It's ourselves as investors. It's not the price of oil. It's not the Fed's Fed fund rate. It's the way in which we may react to any of the things that happen in the news, plain and simple. He mentioned several. Reactions to market stress and volatility usually involve some combination of these. Buying into black swan funds and protective products that cap all future upside and cost a fortune. And you'd say, why would anybody do that? Why would anybody want to do that? Well, because they're thinking emotionally and not rationally. Excessive trading, that's another sign of somebody who's not thinking rationally. Planting a flag and being unwilling to publicly change our minds in the face of new evidence. That's not just with money. That's with a whole bunch of things.
Well, a lot of these, you know, aren't just about money. They're the way we react to a lot of things. You know, different people react to conflict. Different people react to things that happen in their life differently. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we take that same tendency. They take those same tendencies over to the money side. And, you know, there's a lot of very aggressive investors that are, you know, very aggressive in the way they run their personal life, very aggressive in their emotional life, and it's the way they run their money too. which is neither good nor bad. It's how it depends on how their aggressiveness turns out.
Exactly.
Now, we or on have, the conservative side.
Well, it can go either way. Now, here are two that go together. And this is one that these are two that really bother me the most, and I'm sure they do you too, Professor Plum. When you have market volatility, I'm talking about ups, downs. We've seen a lot of it, by the way, over the last couple of weeks.
A little bit.
The whole month. What they do is they flee into the arms of a charlatan who purports to having predicted the market volatility and therefore how to correct it. That's one. And two, throwing money at bizarre alternatives like coins, bars, bricks, and bullion, which have no proven ability to fund a retirement.
No, I mean, we look at a lot of these, I don't want to say fringe because, you know, bars and bullion is not a fringe investment, but the claims are.
Yeah.
The claims are a little outrageous. And the problem is we really, really want to believe that there are investments that can do better than normal type returns with less than acceptable normal risks. We really want to hear that we can get a stock market return with no risk. You can't. We really want to hear that people sell to what we want to hear. We want to hear very low risk. We want to hear high income. We want to hear all these wonderful things. But unfortunately, wanting it to be so and actually being so are not the same thing.
Yeah, you mentioned the real gist of it there, Professor Plum, because you can, you certainly can invest in something that's going to give you much more, a much greater return than normal. I mean, it's possible to do. But here's the key. It has to do with risk.
Right.
Risk. Can you do it with no risk? And usually when these people are pushing this stuff, they try to tell you you can get it with no risk, and that should really put up a bunch of red flags in your mind.
Every investment has risk of some form. An investment in a CD has the risk that you don't earn anything right now. You won't keep up with even the minor amount of inflation we have, especially after taxes. So there are risks, and there are different risks with everything. The problem is anytime that you can get return, and a return that is better than anything else, it's not risk-free. And so there has to be some risk in attaining that. Either there's a liquidity risk, the meaning that I cannot get to my money when I may need my money. The volatility we've seen, there's a lot of volatility in a lot of areas. And so when we're dealing with investing, we have to look at time horizons, risk, return, because there's a lot of times where you can take more risk to get a similar return than what maybe the market as a whole, a global portfolio, or even just a domestic portfolio can do. But that's not what we want. We want to find a way to get more return with less risk. That is very hard to do, and in many cases, on the impossible side.
Well, that's it. People should look. The risk-reward, right? As the risk goes down, As the risk goes down, the
return goes down.
Return goes
potential.
Down. The reward, the potential return, right. When you hear somebody say, and this is the thing, you know, when we feel like we're drowning in whatever we have, either stock market or anything else, and somebody throws us something, we will grab on to the first lifeline, especially if they tell us that it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And we don't think. We just think we have something here. We don't think oftentimes like a rational person who's not drowning would say, well, that's ridiculous.
Well, unfortunately, also, there's a lot of times where people will throw things at you like you were talking about. And they sound really cool, and they sound good. And unless you dig deeper and understand how it actually works, it sounds really good. And that's the sales pitch, and that's why you're buying into it. But once you, you know, scratch the surface and get down underneath of it, you're like, well, how could that actually be? And it goes back to us as humans. We want to know that we're taken care of. We want to know that we have, you know, a better chance. It's just us.
We want to believe it. We want to believe it. Yes.
To believe what we want to believe. I mean, a super conservative investor will only look at the risk side and never believe that there's an appropriate amount of return for a certain amount of risk. Mm-hmm. An aggressive investor will look at the return side and never look at the risk side and never, you know, equate the two that there is an unacceptable amount of risk for the potential return. And so we have to understand that for everything in the investment world, in the money world, there's a measure of return and risk. The more return you want to receive, you have to have, at least in some form, more risk. And as I said, there's risk in multiple different ways. Liquidity risk is one of those areas. Now, you know, obviously, volatility, principal risk is one. Not living up to or beating inflation, high taxes, those are all different risks. And you have to put them all together to create an efficient foundation for your overall needs.
Joshua Brown, I'll bring more of this up later. We're going to take your calls when we come back. But he brings up some great points. And one of them is nothing kills the long-term returns of a portfolio like throwing away the playbook in the heat of a market crisis.
Oh, goodness, yes.
Absolutely. In fact, in some cases, he says the damage that is done could be irreversible. So we'll talk about that later on. Stick around. We got your phone calls coming up next. We'll get to Anthony's question on a windfall elimination and a couple other folks on hold. We'll get your name up there. Still two lines open, 877-PLANNER. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Taking your phone calls, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We got more to talk about on this whole idea of behavioral finance and some great pieces written about this. And people who tend, who purport to predict things, okay? This is where these folks come out of the woodwork, and this is where the real trouble starts, especially in times of volatility. And believe me, they're all out there. You got to know what to look for and how to avoid it. So we will talk about that a little bit later on this hour. I do want to take your phone calls, though. We do have a line or two open right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. I said Anthony is next in Las Vegas. Hi, Anthony. How can we help you today?
Yes, gentlemen. Last week you received a call from a gentleman who lives in Las Vegas in regards to that windfall elimination. He said he had 26 years in the private sector.
Yes.
And a certain number of years with the state. My wife is in the same position. She has 34 years in the private sector, and she's still working for the state. Will the windfall elimination apply to her?
It might, or it may not. Now, while she's working for the state, she's not paying into Social Security, right?
That is correct. She has not made a contribution to Social since 2004.
Okay, but prior to that, she had 34 years working in the private sector, paying into Social Security, correct?
That is correct, sir.
So now the question is, were at least 30 of those years what Social Security would consider substantial? If she has what they consider 30 years of substantial earnings, and for 2016, substantial is right around the $22,000 mark. You know, back in the 80s, it was in the $5,000 range. If she has 30 years of substantial earnings, then there is no windfall elimination provision. If she has less than 30 years, so if some of those years were fairly low earning years, the equivalent, like I said today, of less than $22,000, then they don't count towards reducing the windfall elimination. So if she has 30 full years of substantial, no issue. Less than 30, there'd be a little bit of an issue. If it goes all the way down to less than 20, because several of the years were very part-time years, I don't know what they might have been, then the full impact of the windfall elimination provision hits. So one of the things you can do is get a list of her earnings from the Social Security website. The only way to do that from them without actually going in to see them is if you've received a recent, or you have, since she hasn't put any new money on the book since 2004, any of her.
Yeah, I have it right there, sir.
You have the list of them right there?
Yeah, sure. Her first contribution was of $6 in 1970, and then she gradually, because we were just young pups at the time, and she gradually increased.
Well,
$6. In the 70s, we all didn't make as much. I don't know what substantial would be considered in the 70s or the 80s.
So what we have to do is you can go on the Social Security website and search substantial earnings, and it'll give you a list for every year. And you can just compare 1973, okay, this one works. This one, 74, $6, didn't work. Okay, anyway, and check it off. Count them up how many were actually substantial for those years. And if she's got 30, not an issue. The closer she is to 30, it's not much of an issue. The closer she is to 20 or below, then it's going to be full impact of the, or close to the full impact of the windfall elimination provision.
Oh, that's great information. So we will do that. Again, she started in 70, last contribution early 2004.
Well, let me ask you this. What is her benefit projected to be at full retirement age?
At full retirement, this piece of paper says she would get 1,155. Now, this was dated in 2011, the last paper state we got from Social.
Yeah, that was going to be a hard one to call. My guess is that she does not have 30 full years, but she'll have. It won't be the heavy impact. She probably has 20-plus years, so it'll be somewhere in the middle.
All righty. That's great information.
Okay. Anthony, thank you very much for the call. I'm glad you brought that up. We get a couple of calls on that every week, either on the windfall elimination provision or the government pension offset. Now, in this case, the windfall elimination provision, it's his wife. She had 34.
Roughly. She's paid into Social Security for 34 years. But like you said, one of them was $6.
Right. So the question then becomes, how many of them were a substantial earning years?
Right. And the amount of substantial earnings differs by year because, as he mentioned earlier, what we earned back in the 80s is, on a dollar-for-dollar amount, nowhere near what we earn today just to maintain the same basic standard of living.
Well, inflation brings it up.
Inflation,
yes.
So, yeah. And if I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but I think 1985 was in the $5,000 or $6,000 range.
Per year.
Per year. And that's what would qualify as a substantial earnings mark. As I mentioned earlier as well, 2015 and 16, the number is roughly $22,000. So if you're making 50, you've got it covered. If you're making 15, this year it doesn't count as a substantial earning year towards reducing or eliminating the windfall elimination provision impact.
Yeah, now the windfall elimination provision is the one that takes away your benefit based on your work record.
Correct.
And it's not going to eliminate your entire benefit.
No, unlike the name where it says windfall elimination provision, it will only reduce my benefit. If I have private sector earnings paying into Social Security, and I have public sector earnings where I did not pay into Social Security, but I'm going to receive a pension from that public sector earnings, then the combination of the two could reduce what I'm receiving from Social Security, but it will not eliminate it. At most, it's going to reduce it by 55% of what I was projected to receive if I didn't have the public pension. So it can't eliminate it. Now, on the other side, if I'm also eligible for a spousal benefit, a widow's benefit, a benefit from somebody else's work record, then, and I also have this public pension, then I've got an issue with the government pension offset. And the government pension offset could offset the entire Social Security I would get from somebody else's work record. So the GPO, in some respects, it has a much bigger impact on what I could or may or may not receive somewhere down the line.
Yeah, and on the GPO portion of it, the key thing there is actually you don't necessarily it's just because you're in a WEP situation doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a government pension offset problem.
Well, because you may not be eligible for a spousal or a widow's benefit at any time.
That's true. So on the windfall elimination provision, you have your earnings. Now, it's not that it's going to eliminate 55% of all of your Social Security earnings. So,
like
in
Anthony's wife's case, with an $1,100 projected benefit, it will not reduce that by 55%.
Maybe a third.
Well,
or
the worst
a
case
more.
Scenario is going to be a little over $400. So it could be 35-40%, but it's not going to be the full 50. It's the size of the benefit dictates how much of the offset it's going to be, because there's a phase in it. It doesn't
right. and on the government pension offset side of it,
that one can wipe out the whole thing.
Well, it really could. But the two things that you have to know are that you paid into a public job where you did not pay into Social Security, but that's only part of it. But you also have to be receiving a pension from that public service job.
I don't know of any employment where you do not pay into Social Security where you don't also have a pension. That was one of the reasons that you could, when they did this, that they allowed people to opt out of Social Security because they were already providing a very nice pension. So I don't know of any employment where you're not in Social Security and not getting a pension. Now, there may be a little bit out there, I don't know of it, but the majority of them, if you're not paying into Social Security, you're part of a company. Now, whether you work for them long enough to vest is another issue.
That's another issue, too. All right, but that's a whole other discussion. All right, hang on. Don Rensselaer, Indiana, we're going to get to your question coming up on taxes. We have, looks like, three lines open right now, so call with your money questions, 877-PLANNER. If you're wondering where to meet the Brain Trust, where you're going to find us around the country, we're going to tell you more about that as well, because you can talk to the Brain Trust in person at one of the many workshops. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. It is Bucket Strategy Investment. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum here for you every day. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. If you've got a money question, we're going to be answering it today throughout the rest of this hour. And we do every day right here on this program. And speaking of answering your money questions, you know you can find out the answers to your money questions in person with the Brain Trust. Professor Rick Plum and Terry Keyes and all the whole gang, they're going to be everywhere. Different parts of the country. If you want to find out where, you simply go to wealthed.com. It's the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. Now, the next one is going to be in Las Vegas. We still got a little time, but not a lot. Saturday, February 20th, followed by Seattle, Washington on the 27th of February, and Phoenix, Arizona on March 12th. Again, these are all Saturdays, 9 o'clock local time starts. And by the way, they're all free. Las Vegas, Seattle, Phoenix. Those are the next three. If you want to find out where we're going to be throughout March and into portions of April, you can go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. Check it out. Sign up there. It's all free, as I said. You get to meet the Brain Trust, get your questions answered, and learn about not just buckets, but about retirement income challenges. And the two go very well hand in hand. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Back to the phone lines, Don in Rensselaer, Indiana. Hi, Don, how you doing?
Great, how are you guys?
Doing very well. What's up?
I have a tax question. Usually my taxes are pretty straightforward, so I don't have too many. About a year ago, my father passed away and left. I have two other brothers, and he left us a piece of property, and we sold that property. And I received a 1099-S form. And okay. We had the property appraised at the time that, well, prior to when we sold it, and appraised for like $24,000. We ended up selling it substantially less for like $10,000. Now, am I due to pay any tax on that property?
Oh, heavens no. It was appraised at $24,000 and you only received $10,000.
Yes.
So if anything, you have a loss. Now, how quickly after you inherited it did you sell it?
We inherited it, I'm going to say we took over like in June or July of last year, and then we sold it, I'm thinking like September of October of this past year.
And so it would be a fairly aggressive move to say that it lost more than 50% of its value in the 3 months, 4 months that you owned it.
Right.
I mean, there would be people that say, hey, look, I have an appraisal, but appraisal is a guess, right? And so
yes. The
IRS would say the appraisal was wrong. Because you sold it for less, but there's definitely no gain because
from the
value that matters for taxes, there's two values. One is the basis, and the basis is whatever the value was on the day dad died. And if the appraisal was done on or about the day your dad died, then you could say, well, I can rely on this appraisal as the value of the date of death. And then the other one that matters is how much did you receive when you sold it? And so in your case, it's a lot less. And so there is no gain. The question is, how aggressive do you want to be on taking a loss?
You know, I really never really crossed my mind. I was just more concerned about paying any tax on it at all.
No, there won't be any taxes due. It was worth at least $10,000. You have an appraisal that said it was worth, you know, almost 2.5 times that much on the day that you inherited it. And
right.
You sold it for $10,000. As long as you didn't sell it to like your nephew for a below market price that, you know, that was basically you gave it to him. But it was really worth 24, but you gave it to him. That's a different issue. That's not a loss. But, you know, you could make an argument that a qualified appraisal showed it at $24,000 and you sold it for 10, but the IRS is going to say in 3 months, unless you can point to something that happened on that property in that 3 month period of time that dropped the value that much, they're going to say that the appraisal was just, you know, not a good appraisal, but they're not going to tax you on it either.
So there's no, I mean, because I usually do my taxes with the taxware software. When I go online, it has me fill out the 1099-S, and then I input all the info that I got from the 1099. And then below, it's got like three boxes that I can't remember what the wording is, but one of them is like, you know, it's showing what your gain or loss would be. I think it's asking probably what the appraised price of the property was then.
Right. So it's asking for basis is what it's looking for. What
yeah.
was your basis in the property? And you either say inherited and my basis was 10, so there's zero gain, zero loss. Or you know, if you want to rely on the appraisal, you show a basis of 24,000, and you have if they ever come back to you, you have the appraisal that says this is the value on the date of his death.
Okay. So on my taxes, then, basically, I just need to fill out that 1099-S. There's no other forms that I have to fill out for capital gain or capital loss, correct?
Well, depending on how your tax program works, you're going to look for a Schedule D as in dog. And that 1099-S should take all the money and put it into the schedule so that, you know, when the tax return is printed, there is a Schedule D that will show your gains and losses, and it'll show the property value, the sale of the capital asset basis, and it'll show either a gain or loss on the right-hand column, and that will get transferred over to your 1040.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. All right. Well, I appreciate it. I knew I could get the right answer from you guys, so that's why I called.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don. We always appreciate you giving us a call. Good to hear from Don in Rensselaer, Indiana. Let's move along to south of there to Lawrenceville, Georgia, and talk with Lloyd. Hi, Lloyd.
Hi.
How can we help you today?
Yeah, what's a good question? What's a good place to invest RMD after the tax is paid?
Well, so you're just saying I've got to do my required minimum distribution, and I got nothing else to do with the money, so I'm going to invest it, right?
Right.
Oh, well, what do you want this money to do for you? You want it for your kids? You want it for your grandkids? Do you want...
Want to grow.
You want it to grow. Okay, well, then almost, you know, any growth mutual fund, ETF, if you wanted to be aggressive, you could buy an individual stock. There's a lot going on out there. There's all kinds of different ways to invest for growth. Depending upon the size of the required minimum distribution, you could do, if you already have a lot of personal money, this RMD could help you pick up real estate or other things. So there's a lot of things for growth.
Now, you mean growth, Lloyd, you mean you're talking about for yourself, or are you trying to grow it for your heirs or what?
Sounds like heirs.
No, for myself.
For yourself? When do you want to spend it?
Well, I don't want to spend it now until, whenever I need it.
Well, so what you would do is look at the overall portfolio, and the money in the IRA may be invested a little bit more conservatively in case you do need it, because you always have that required minimum distribution that's coming in. And this money that, that's only a 4 or 5% distribution, so it's only 4 or 5% of the overall portfolio at the most, that would be invested for more of the growth-oriented investments going forward. And that's where you use your stock mutual funds, your index funds, your ETFs, or if, like I said, if you really want to be aggressive, individual stocks.
Do you put, wouldn't the money be taxed again?
Yes, it might be. If you put it into an individual stock that has no dividend and it grows, but you never need the money and you pass it on to your heirs, there's no tax there. If you put it into a mutual fund or something that has a higher dividend or a capital gain distribution, you'll pay tax on that. But that's going to happen no matter what you do. Any realized, what they call realized gain or interest, is going to be taxable to you because it's outside the sheltering of the IRA.
Got you.
And taxes aren't the worst thing in the world. I mean, if I can get a good gain and have to pay a little bit of long-term capital gain or qualified dividend, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Okay.
Does that help you out?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right, Lloyd, thank you for the call. I think time horizon is important there.
Sound like he needs the money. It sounds like it may be a long time before he needs the money, so he can invest.
Right.
And because he knows he's got that required minimum distribution happening, now the question is, should I be taking more than just the RMD if I can afford to do it without hurting myself tax-wise?
Now,
taxes are a consideration. They're not the only consideration.
No, and I think some people tend to look at them as the only consideration because, doggone it, they don't want to have to write that check.
Well, and if you want to avoid paying taxes, put the money in a CD. You're not going to pay much in taxes on the earnings there, will you? Because there isn't very much in earnings.
Now, for somebody who's obviously over now 70 and a half, he wants it for growth. He's not investing for growth, according to him, for his heirs. He's doing it more for himself.
But he doesn't know when.
No, and so when you don't really have a time horizon, it makes it difficult, I think, to assess what kind of risk you need to take for growth. I mean, growth is a relative term.
And he's asking about a specific asset or a specific area. What should I do to invest this piece of the pie? And at most, it's 4 or 5% of the pie. So how is the rest of the pie invested? Is the rest of the pie in his IRA, or is the rest of the pie split between a Roth, a personal account, and the IRA? So how do we go about developing a plan for the overall? Because if he has personal money that he's set aside for an emergency fund, and this money is probably never going to be needed, then he can be more aggressive with this money for growth. If he doesn't have any personal money, and everything's in the IRA, and if he wants to be able to get to some money quickly, if he needs it, but he doesn't want to hit the big tax event of taking a bigger distribution from the IRA than he would otherwise take, then this money can't be invested really for growth. It has to be invested more for an emergency type money or a less volatile area so he can get to it at a very quick, you know, time horizon.
Right.
So this, it's very difficult when somebody says, what's the best investment for this little piece of my pie? Unless you know what's going on with the rest of the pie. Because so we have to do some planning.
Yeah, because the rest of it is affected by that, and that investment affects the rest of the portfolio.
It's all interrelated.
Exactly. All right. Now, more of your phone calls. Ray in Seattle, hold on. I want to make sure you have all the time you need to ask your question. So just a couple minutes here. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. You'll be up next. And we got a couple of lines. Looks like just two lines open right now. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. 877-752-6637. Got some emails coming up. If no time next segment, then we'll do them in another hour. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, it is Bucket Strategy Investing. Phone calls, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We do have some more things to say on behavioral finance, but as I said, phone calls come first, so we will do that. Don't forget to, just remind you, if you want to find out where the Brain Trust is going to be in a city near you, or even if it's not near you, it's worth it to just go there. You go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Check out the schedule right there. You can sign up for any and all if you want. It'd be fun to have people who just go around like deadheads, you know, fall plumheads or something. I don't know.
Got to come up with a better name than that.
I know. It's too close to the original. But nonetheless, you can follow the Brain Trust around and just get all kinds of great advice. It's not just the advice. It's the money questions that people ask. And you think, huh, I have the same kind of issue. So anyway, check it out at wealthed.com. Find out where the Brain Trust will be. They will be traveling just about everywhere. Okay, back to the phone lines. 877-PLANNER. Will in Vancouver is up next. Hi, Will.
Hi.
How can we help you today?
I have a question regarding real estate. Let's say a home or a rental home, and I'm in a 15% tax bracket or lower. Do I pay tax on the capital gains?
How large is the capital gain going to be?
Well, that's what I want to find out. Does it matter?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's say the capital gains is $50,000.
Okay.
And otherwise, my tax bracket would be like $30,000.
Okay, so you would have $30,000 of taxable income is what you're saying, if you
right.
did not have this gain.
Right.
Are you married or single?
Married.
Okay, married. Now we're going to get away from the majority of the capital gains. As long as the capital gain would have been taxed at the 15% bracket, if it had not been capital gain, it will receive a 0% tax rate. Anything in excess of that would go over. Now, in your situation that you've described, $30,000 of taxable income, that's in the 15% bracket, and you can actually have up to about $75,000 of taxable income and stay in the 15% bracket. So in that example, there's about $45,000 worth of room still in the 15% tax bracket. That means the first $45,000 of the gain will have a 0% long-term capital gain rate. But the other portion of the gain, the rest of it, that extra $5,000 that puts you up to the 80 number of taxable income, that would not have been in the 15% ordinary income tax bracket. So it will carry a 15% long-term capital gain bracket. So only gain that would have been in the 15% ordinary income bracket gets that, or lower, gets that lower 0% long-term capital gain bracket.
It's a weird thing to try to explain without the milk bottle or
without the visuals.
The visuals, but that really is how it works.
Yeah, no, I think I understand. As soon as you move to the higher tax bracket, then whatever portion is over what it would have been in the 15% bracket.
Right. I mean, and for our purposes, if you had $30,000, now where is that $30,000 of regular income coming from right now? Is it coming from mostly Social Security, half Social Security, half pensions and other income? Where is it coming from?
Social Security.
Because the gain is part of the modified adjusted gross income. So the gain will create potentially more taxation on your Social Security. So where you may only be paying tax on a portion of your a small portion of your Social Security right now, this higher modified adjusted gross income is going to push the amount of Social Security that's taxable into a higher level. So now you'll be paying 85, you'll be paying tax on 85% of your Social Security. So that 85% of the Social Security that wasn't there before is going to use up some of that lower tax bracket on its own. So it's a sliding scale, but you're looking at, okay, what is my taxable income going to be? And so if my taxable income goes to $90,000 and the break between the 15 and the 25 is 75, well, any gain that falls below that is at a zero bracket. Any gain that falls above that, assuming you stay under about $450,000, is going to be in the 15% bracket. So you have a little bit that at 50,000, you're going to have a little bit in that higher bracket. Not a whole lot.
All right?
Okay. Yeah, I understand. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the call, Will. Appreciate that.
But while only a small portion of the gain will be in the 15% bracket, another portion of his Social Security will be in it, and that's also taxed at 15%.
Exactly, and that's something that needs to be brought up, but we don't have time to get into it. Maybe next hour. 877-PLANNER, I want to get to Joel in Houston, Texas up next. Hello, Joel.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How can we help you today?
Okay. I have an inherited Roth IRA and IRA account.
Okay.
And person was deceased in 2011. And in Roth IRA, I have not taken minimum distribution. So do I have until December 2016 to close the account or 2017?
It's the fifth year, it's containing the anniversary of death. So it would be 16. I'd have to go back and make sure about it. So,
wait, it was 2011?
His son passed away in 2011.
And then, all
right. Yeah, it's 2000, by December 2016. The IRA has to be depleted because you did not start taking required minimum distributions the year after he passed. Now, the person that passed away was your son, unfortunately?
My brother.
Oh, your brother. How old was your brother when he passed?
57.
So he was well under required minimum distribution age on his own. So, yeah, you have a five-year period of time, and it's 5 years containing the anniversary of death, the fifth anniversary. It's the year, December 31st of the year containing the fifth anniversary. And so that'll be 2016, not 17.
Okay. And second, if I had a regular IRA, same inherited, and I made it two accounts, one was for real estate and one for stock market. So I do take minimum distribution from real estate more than it required, but I don't take them smaller account from.
Well, you have to look at the total IRA value.
Okay.
And so if the total IRA value is $100,000 and you've got it split 60-40, you know, and the required minimum distribution is, call it, well, $6,000, you just got to take $6,000 from IRA, from inherited IRA, from that person's inherited IRAs.
From regardless which account, doesn't matter, right?
That's my understanding, yes. And the IRS will never know how to track it anyway.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I take more than required, so.
Oh, okay. Well, then you'll be all right.
Thank you very much.
It would
okay,
be a
Joel,
lot,
thank you for the call.
It'd be a lot cleaner to have it all with one custodian, and then it'd be easy.
Well, sure, yeah.
Because there's something gnawing at the back of my mind that may have said that if he split it like that, he may have a problem, but I can't remember where I read that, and it's probably been 10 years since I read it.
Give it some thought. We got to take a break. If you need the brain trust, off the air, you can talk to Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing is just ahead.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.